the inaugural episode of Slam Magazine's Blue Chips Radio. This is your host, Justin Delaney. To my right, my main man, Frank Kaye.
What's going on, man? How are you?
Can't complain, man. You know, we got the genesis, if you will, the debut episode of the Blue Chips podcast. Definitely looking forward to working with you and, you know, getting our hands dirty with regards to, you know, the stuff that we do so well. How you feeling though?
Good. I mean, it's funny, before we got on the air, you know, right here in this room, you know, we have all these LeBron, you know, covers here and AIs and so forth. And Slam has been so deep into the, you know, prep hoops culture for so long.
For sure.
Going back to, you know, the LeBron covers and the Bassey covers and, you know, we can say her name covers for days. And so to now sort of bring it into this sort of digital era and podcast era, I think it's exciting. I think it's an exciting time, I think we have some very good sort of ideas and plans for.
Absolutely. And you've got quite some stain with Slam. You've been with Slam for like close to a decade now at this point, no?
Sound like that. Nice. Yeah, it's been a minute. Going back to the Born Ready days.
Yeah. Ironically, we're looking at a photo of him right here at the East New York Memorial Classic.
It's
got Brooklyn written all over it. You're actually a Brooklyn guy yourself.
Guy myself, yeah. Bishop Lachlan.
Okay.
You know,
shout out to Keith Williams.
Yeah.
I would say Marquise, but, you know, he's...
Mr. New York City, no?
He's on his way to Mount Verde. Did you hear about that?
Sources say, or...
Nah, it's official. He's going to Mount Verde. Like, it's been confirmed.
Right,
so...
Damn, devastated.
Yeah, I mean, I lost to Lachlan, but, you know, I'm sure it's the right move for him. But, yeah, you know... That aside, you know, essentially with regards to Blue Chips Radio, we'll be looking to cover more or less, to your point, the high school preps, amateur, grassroots sector of basketball. So definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, when you say high school basketball, it is a whole, like, umbrella under it from, like, recruiting, AAU summer.
Yeah.
Sneaker circuits, you know, regular high school season, you know, all-star, you know, so even at that itself, high school ball, it's like it can go in so many different angles.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what ultimately I think has always kind of brought you and I together. We've always kind of had that passion for the grassroots, for the amateur, you know, for that essentially, you know, the step before pro.
Right.
So
it's fascinating because it's like, you know, like you see the final product, but like, at the high school level, it's anybody that can, whatever talent evaluators out there claiming that they know how to sort of pick out the best. Like, that's, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
It's fascinating seeing them go from, you know, we were talking about earlier about some all Americans at high school level now are just hoping to land a summer league job.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating how it kind of just goes, and it within a course of a year, it can change. And so, and it, you know, big decisions, you know, what college you go to, what conference it is, what positions are available at that position, you know, and as we speak to some of our guests, though, you know, tell us exactly, you know, why they chose that school. And that's fascinating in itself. You know, why is it, you know, what did the coach tell you when he was recruiting you? You know, who are some of the guys you're bringing along with?
Yeah.
And, you know, how did those, you know, visits go, on campus visits? And so it's a fascinating business. I think a lot of people who sort of see it from outside are like, well, you know, it's not as fun as the NBA, this and that. But the steps and, you know, kind of all the shaking going on around behind the scenes is pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's ultimately, you know, always brought me to it. I've always been, you know, interested in the quote unquote process, you know, what it takes to go from, you know, that 110-pound, you know, seventh, eighth grader to, you know, the number one player in the country. And again, just kind of going back to our tenure of friendship, you know, it's amazing. I think like 3-4 years ago when we initially met, you know, talking about guys like Trey Duvall or, you know, Isaiah Briscoe when he was like a rising senior in college, you know, it's amazing to know that we were kind of, you know, on the cusp as far as that stuff was concerned. And it's, you know, it's always good to just be able to sit back and like, hey, you remember, you know, at that time we were talking about this, and, you know, at that point he was considering these schools, and, you know,
now
this is where he's going. But
And when we speak to the kids, it's fascinating to hear from their point of view, you know what I mean? Because at this level, like basketball, it's fun. It's promising. A lot of people telling them that, you know, they have a shot of doing some really big things. But it kind of, you know, once you get to the league, it's very different. You know, and it's pretty interesting how, like, the way players view the game changes when they're 17 to, like, when they're 19. Yeah. But by then, it becomes a job. And it gets, you know, it's fascinating when you speak to 17-year-olds and how they view basketball and why they play and, you know, why they do it and their motives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, definitely looking forward to bringing you all, the listeners, that you know, inside perspective that you may not get elsewhere. And again, just looking forward to working with, you know, some of the top talent in the area. Speaking of top talent in the area, I think there's still a couple of guys that are undecided.
Yeah.
Want to take a poke at any early projections?
Man. This is the real podcast. This is not even the practice. Oh, man.
I'm putting you on the spot, baby.
So we start off with our high school diarist.
Muhammad Bamba. Harlem Zone.
7-footer. What's that wingspan? It just keeps growing every time.
I actually looked at it earlier today, and I think it was 7'9".
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, that in the league, and if he was in the NBA right now, he would have the largest, biggest wingspan in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's like 17, 18 years old.
Shout out to Mo, man.
Yeah. And there's all the other sort of, like, he's one of the smartest players kids.
Yeah. Reminds me a lot of, like, a Karl Towns and just the way people talked about, you know, a Karl Towns in terms of his, you know, maturity both on and off the court.
Right. He's down to 4 schools, so Texas, Duke, Kentucky, Michigan.
Yeah.
And Michigan. I'm not even comfortable.
He said, I don't even want to take a poke at this one. I don't blame you, man.
Do you have a gut feeling?
I do. You know, I actually listened to a handful of different interviews he's done on the subject, but it could be wrong, but my crystal ball is leaning towards Duke. I see Duke happen. I mean, some folks, you know, there were some discussions about the depth they already had from a front court perspective, but you know, Mo Bamba, once in a lifetime kind of player. I just look at, you know, the kind of person he is, you know, what he's ultimately looking to get out of college, you know, with regards to networking and, you know, establishing himself outside of basketball. And this is, you know, this is me talking. But I think Duke would be, I mean, that's my pick. That's where I'm projecting.
Yeah. You were saying, so the backcourt would then look 2 top 5 players in the class of 2017, you know, Wendell Carter Jr.
Hey.
You know, 6'9", you know, but he's a stretch 3.
Yeah.
You can stretch him out.
You could definitely stretch him out.
And you have Mo.
And Mo, I mean, you might be able to make an argument to stretch Mo out. I mean, he's been showing face-up ability.
Yeah. He'll tell you he can bring the ball to the floor too.
Yeah.
He'll tell you he can bring the ball to the floor.
You actually saw him play. I had the pleasure of watching him play 2 games in Pennsylvania this year. One at Westtown, and then the other at the PSA, the PSA showcase. But man, he's talk about a specimen. You know, he's. I can't wait to see him.
Yeah, it's like we're trying to move on to the class of 2018, but it's still a lot of you written for the 2017 class.
That's for sure. But you know, in my opinion, at least, I think that's always what's added in. An element of excitement to this time of the year. Yeah. You know, watching those guys in the Jordan Brand games, the McDonald's games, the Ball's Life games, just knowing, you know, what their potential is and having no idea of where they're going and, you know, just kind of letting your imagination go to work. So a lot to look forward to, you know, both on the court and with the podcast. So,
So if it is an inaugural podcast, it was kind of, interesting because we were trying to figure out who would be the right guy to be the first guy. And so, you know, we had our list of guys that we were going through, and it just so happened to be that you know, we had all the top players here in New York City for the Jordan Brand Classic.
JBC.
Shout out to Mike. Sounds so casual. So we were trying to figure out, like, who would be that right guy.
Yeah.
And we ended up settling with somebody who we think is going to be a pretty big deal in college basketball next year.
Yeah, definitely a lottery pick, I think, in 2018.
Yes.
A guy I think is going to make a smooth transition to the next level game. And a guy who, you know, has the genetic background,
right.
I think, to get him to the next level. And the support you know, from a former professional.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. So, you know, so we're talking about, you know, Mr. Gary Trent Jr., 6'5", 6'6".
The kid, Gary.
Shooting guard, headed to Duke.
Yes, sir. Cameron Indoor. Durham. Raleigh Nation.
Man. So he's out of, you know, out of Minnesota, Apple Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Played a couple years with Tyus Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Was playing varsity since the 8th grade at mm-hmm. Apple Valley. So,
mm-hmm. Physical specimen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, gets it from the dad.
Yep.
And yeah, so it, you know what's funny? Like, you know, we were talking and, you know, you guys were here the interview. And so, one thing that I was always kind of like really impressed by from when he was talking, it was just like how nonchalant he is about the guys he's been around in terms of, you know, establishing the NBA with the Timberwolves. And he has pretty close access to a lot of, you know, players that were
pros,
beyond pros. They were pretty all-star players.
Yeah, all-star superstars, caliber. All-stars.
Maybe a couple of them, what we call Hall of Famers one day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he knows his stuff. He knows his stuff. He knows his history. So I was impressed by the way he just kind of like was like, yeah, you know, that's uncle this, uncle that, you know, yeah.
It's just different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, with that being said, with no further ado, episode 1, Slam Blue Chips Podcast. Holla.
This one is for the culture. Yeah. Mojo on the beat.
Directly across from me, we have our esteemed guest. It's our pleasure to welcome Gary Trent Sr. and Gary Trent Jr. How you guys doing?
Awesome, man. Doing fantastic. Appreciate you having us.
Excellent. Absolutely. To my right, we have our co-host, Frank Kaye.
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
What's going on, Frank? How you living?
Good, brother.
So Gary Sr., well, how should we distinguish you guys, Gary Senior, Gary Junior,
so the listeners get it right.
Cool.
They probably can tell the difference in the bass and the voice. So.
Definitely.
How does mom do it at home in terms of differentiating guys?
Oh no, his telling your nickname.
JR.
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 Word. So, see, you had mentioned when we were just talking, you just flew into the city. How's New York treating you so far?
I mean, it's an awesome city. Been here many, many times. You know, it was almost the ultimate moment. My rookie year, when I was playing for Portland, we spent New Year's in New York.
Right.
So I think we were going to play the Knicks on the 2nd. So we got here like the 29th, or not like the 30th. Uh-huh. So, you know, I spent my rookie New Year's in New York. So, you know,
word.
Been right here ever since.
Word. Likewise, Gary, you've been in the city for a few days. How's the Jordan Brand experience been for you?
Yeah, it's been great. I'm fortunate and I'm blessed to have the opportunity to be here. This is actually my 2nd time to New York, and we actually had the opportunity to go out to the city, see what it's about a little bit. So it's a beautiful city, and I love it. I like it.
We had a Nike tournament here last year, the EYBL.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. First session, right? Over in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Nice.
The day after Jordan Classic, so here you are. Did you get a chance to go last year to the Jordan Classic?
Yeah, we had the opportunity. My team and a whole bunch of EYBL teams actually went. It was great. They had some great talent, and I just knew that was something that I wanted to be a part of, so I just worked hard, and we're here now, so I need to show why I should be here.
There you go.
Word, absolutely. So, Gary, you, with regards to your – Gary Jr., with regards to your high school career, started out Apple Valley, Minnesota, following the footsteps of Tyus Jones, a gentleman who also played at Duke University, where you're heading.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from him?
Yeah, just a whole bunch of things. The approach that you have to have to the game, you have to be in kill mode every day. Every day he came to practice, he worked hard. He was a great leader. He showed you how to be a great basketball player. And that's why he is what he is today, and that's why he is where he is in life.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. So Tyus Jones, you know, being the starting point guard at Duke, I'm pretty sure he's giving you some good stories in terms of, like, you know, what to do there once you land, in terms of, like, you know, being able to, you know, withhold your own. I'm just curious, a couple of advice that he's sort of kind of giving you a heads up of what to expect once you get to that level.
Yeah, some that you should know. But he told me just when you go in there, just have an open mindset, almost in a sense, have your mind as a sponge. Mm-hmm. Just listen to the older guys. They can teach you a lot. You know, freshmen coming in, you might think you know it all, but mm-hmm. you got to go in there humble and just
mm-hmm.
listen.
Mm-hmm. And I guess senior, to that point about teaching, you know, you had an NBA career. Speak about that in terms of, like, here you are, you know, you were there some number of years. You sort of know, you know, what it takes not only to get there, but also, like, being able to sort of withstand a certain amount of longevity there. From that experience, you know, what are some of the takeaways that you were able to take away from that experience and give it and tell Junior about?
I mean, the number one thing is you have to stay working at your craft. If you are going to be a professional basketball player or a professional at anything, you have to stay sharp and stay working on your craft. That's the number one thing. That's what you're here for. That's what you're being paid for. And that's what this is all about. You know, one thing when we used to take our trips, you know, especially with young teams, coach would tell them, this is, you know, you come from the cold to a Miami or a L.A., you know, coach has to make sure he emphasizes this is a business trip, not a vacation. And that's really the same with this Jordan Brand game here. Yeah, this is fun and whatnot, but this is a business trip. This is not a vacation. You're here to work hard, showcase your talent, showcase your skills, and, you know, show why you deserve to be here and just keep progressing forward.
Mm-hmm. Word. Interesting. So with regards to work ethic and just progress in general, Gary, I think I read somewhere as early as like 6 or 7 years old, you were averaging like 30 points per game in youth leagues. What are some of your earliest memories with regards to working on your craft and just developing into the person that you are?
Yeah, exactly. I tell this story all the time. Numerous times I told this story. My dad simply just came up to me one day and asked, do you want to play basketball and do you want to be good at basketball? And me being a little kid, you know, I was just like, sure, you know. So one day he took me to the track and we started dribbling and we just dribbled a mile's worth. And at every 100 meters, we did 10 push-ups and 10 sit-ups. So that ended up being 160 push-ups and sit-ups, doing this all at the age of 5 or 6. And we just continued to work. We did that for the first year. And I was always wondering, like, why are we doing dribbling? And he simply just had to explain to me that if you can't dribble the ball up the floor or you can't dribble, you won't even be able to get your shot off. So having the ball handling was one of the most important things that you could have as a basketball player on the court.
Absolutely. Now, Gary Senior, you've had a pretty unique story with regards to your journey as a professional and just, you know, kind of moving up through the MAC. I believe you were even coined the term the Shaq of the MAC. Tell us a little bit about that transition from when you were maybe 16, 17 years old into being recruited to college. And
I wasn't really highly recruited at all. You know, due to the things that were transpiring in my life at the time, I was going to summer school going into my senior year to make up for credits for missing school and dropping out and things like that. So when I got invited to, back in the day, it was like Dave Crider All-American Camp. They used to have a Cincinnati and five-star camp and things of those nature. I wasn't able to attend, so I didn't get out there on the circuit to get majorly recruited. So only local people saw me, like, you know, and I don't think even Ohio University really was recruiting me. My superintendent and my high school coach had contacted them and was like, hey, we have a kid down here that might have some potential. You know, he's got some baggage with him. You know, you guys might want to take a look at him. And that's how I ended up really getting a look at college. They weren't beating my door down. I didn't have a box full of letters and getting flooded on the recruiting side. It didn't happen like that for me.
Word. I think I even read somewhere you had received a call from the head coach. And, you know, some of the early questions you were asking him is like, you know, do you guys play in the NCAA? You know, are you going to be on TV? You know, what was that call like?
I never had a hoop dream growing up. You know, that wasn't my inspiration. You know, I had a lot of other things going on in life. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I wanted to be like my dad and what I saw my uncles and, you know, people in my family doing. So in my mind, I was going to be a better kingpin than my dad was. You know, I just wasn't going to get caught in my mind. So I didn't really have the hoop dream, you know, living in the city, doing what I was doing day in and day out. So, you know, I got a chance to get a change of environment, and I kind of just, you know, got into basketball. You know, like I tell my son, you know, I never played with referees or officials or on a basketball organized game until 10th grade. You know, I was 15 the first time a referee blew a foul on me, you know. So that when coach called me that night, you know, I didn't know it was called the NCAA tournament. You know, at that point in time in my life, I didn't even know Jordan went to Carolina. I've never even followed basketball. I think the first college basketball game I ever saw was Derek Coleman and the alley-oop and Orangeman. And I think they were playing Georgetown. It just happened to come on TV. And I was just at home, and I happened to see it. And I think they were playing Georgetown. Okay. And I watched that game, and that was the first time I had, like, seen a basketball game. I think they had Sherman. They were called the Alley-Oop Noirs, and they was getting all these dunks, highlights. And I was like, man, that looks sweet. So, you know, I didn't even watch it. So when Coach was asking me, when I was asking him questions, I didn't know the name of the tournament. I was like, you guys playing that big basketball tournament that's on TV? And, you know, I asked him, you know, do y'all play on TV? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, you know, if we make the tournament. And I was like, can y'all win that championship? And he was like, we get the right players here, we can win a national title. And I just was like, all right, I'll come there. And, you know, the crazy thing is I had never met him in person. I had never seen him. I had never been to the campus. I didn't know where it was at. I just knew it was like 80 miles south of my hometown. So he said we was D1, said we could play on TV, and we could win that title. So I was like, all right, I'll come.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and I signed right up on the phone right there that night.
Steven, to piggyback on that, you know, so you were saying, you know, as it translates to junior, you know, you were raised in a different environment and how that shaped your life. Obviously, Gary, you know, prior to on the podcast, you were telling me, you know, mom has a MBA, you know, dad, a former player. What are some of the things that you've been able to tell Junior in terms of, like, you know, growing up yourself in a different, completely different environment than what Junior's growing up in terms of shaping his development in terms of what you were able to learn from your experience?
Well, my wife is a stepmom, and, you know, I think she probably came into his life at around 3 years old, so. You know, never remembers meeting her like we don't remember meeting our parents, which is a great thing. So the relationship was always natural and just always was a very focused woman on top of her game. And, you know, and in all actuality, I'm able to be a lot of things to my children due to what she is doing behind the scenes, whether it's how she works or what she provides and things of that nature. So I'm able to come here and support him, and I'm able to do a lot of things. You know, there was times where, you know, I'll get a call from his AAU coach back in middle school a couple of days before tournament, and we looking up a plane ticket, $1,000. I've never even bought myself a $1,000 plane ticket. She like, what are we doing? Why are we buying a $1,000 ticket for a kid to go to a tournament? You know what I'm saying? And I had to explain to her, but at the same time, you know, she would support that. It just, you know, sports wasn't her world. You know, she has an MBA, she's a master's, you know, business, and, you know, head of human resources, so it's a totally different world. But she understands the dynamics of business and how marketing works and things like that. So she's been very supportive of me and very supportive of him and, you know, been in his life every step of the way. And, you know, we've been living in Minnesota since he was at the end of fourth grade. So, you know, we've been, you know, living him and my other three sons, we all been living together for the last 8-9 years. As one, so everything's been good, and you had that nurturing family environment that I didn't have, and, you know, a balanced household of mother and father that I didn't have, and it's been warming. There's been times where I wasn't in my right state of mind, but her stability helped me stay focused and, you know, stay focused on my sons and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Word. Mm-hmm. Now, Gary Jr., you obviously you got the Duke shirt on. we spoke a little bit off air earlier about, you know, when you plan to head down to Raleigh. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of growing up and speaking on my personal experiences, one of my earliest experiences with basketball was in North Carolina, where the majority of my family is. And, you know, it was always a dream of mine and both my cousins and, you know, a lot of my family just to be able to play ball at Duke. You know, what did that recruitment look like? Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Most definitely, yeah. It started my junior year, going into my junior summer, and we simply just, they saw me play on the EYBL circuit. It's just a Nike league. It's just the best league that you could play for in the summer circuit. They have the best talent every year. And it was a lot of schools that was on my trail, but as I sat down and I buckled down with my dad of what schools that could help me in the long run, on and off the court, and Duke came second to none. Just everything behind it is great. The tradition, when you hear Duke, it opens eyes. Coach K, the brotherhood is really like a family throughout the whole organization, from past and present players. Everybody is one, and you just think of success when you hear about Duke, and I loved it to death on my visits, and that's why I chose it.
Word.
You know, and you talk about, you know, being around great players. You know, your dad, when he played with the Timberwolves, you know, Sam Cassell was there. you know, KG was there. I'm just curious if you have sort of any good stories when you were around either at practice or around the arena, being around those guys. And what do you remember those? Or I'm assuming you were like 4 or 5 years old probably at the time. Yeah. What do you remember of those times?
Yeah, I got some present memories as well, too. Mm-hmm. Just, for example, Kevin Garnett and Uncle Sam, in a sense. Okay. They're like uncles, to me. So they're great. They're funny. My recent experience with my Uncle Kevin is basically just went to his house, just chilling, mm-hmm. going jet skiing on his lake. $1 million house. It just
$7 million house.
But it's really motivating. You know, you see the position they're in, what they can do, how they can change lives, and you want to be a part of that. So it's almost like every time I go over there, it's a reminder. If you continue to work hard, this could be you. This what you're working for. So I just like memories like that, just little things they tell me. Just got to keep working hard and stay humble, you know, the motivational stuff.
So they're like uncles to you. You speak to them probably regularly, or how often would you say you speak to them?
I would say a couple months.
What, his junior year when I was coaching there, mm-hmm. you know, he came to practice a lot. So he probably, now that he's older, got more chances to really absorb what, you know, Kev might have been saying, you know, going out to dinner, coming to practice, watching Carl Towns, watching Wiggins, just seeing, you know, because he's been around it a long time. So you were able to watch it when you were younger as a kid, more in fascination, and now you're able to watch it as a young male, as a young man that's trying to come into this world. You can see really absorb it from a different perspective now. You know, mm-hmm. watching what guys need to do mm-hmm. to be successful, what guys are doing, how practice works, and whatnot. So you know. I was very fortunate when Kev came back to Minnesota to be an assistant coach and be a player development coach with the staff, and working with Carl, I learned a lot. And, you know, I learned a lot from a guy who's there currently now, Vince LaGarza. Me and him worked a lot of the big guys, Gorgie, Carl, even got a chance to work with Zach and Wiggins on certain mornings when other coaches were in meetings. So it was a great overall experience for me to be able to be around that, because I picked up a lot of the things that are transpiring in today's game to transfer to my son and for him to be able to see it. And anytime we had home games on Fridays or Saturday nights and he wasn't in season, after the game, we would go over to the facility and work out, you know, and it was just an overall great experience across the board.
Right. So with regards to experiences and just kind of looking at things in hindsight, you know, 9 years in the NBA, a handful of years overseas, what was your biggest challenge as an individual post-basketball once the ball stopped bouncing for you?
Well, like I tell my son, as you say that, my terminology is, what will you do once there is no more air in your ball? Like, you know, now I don't have to wake up every day and everything I do is surrounded by me staying in shape, me working, me training, me doing this and that, which I still do. But the biggest challenge was just, what do you want to do next? You know, what do you want to do next that can stimulate you day in and day out, life day in and day out? And, you know, to me, with the position that my wife is in life, I'm able to really do what I want to do. And what I really want to do is just really raise my sons. You know, I have a 9-year-old son, a 5-year-old son, a 4-year-old son. So I have a total of 4 sons, and I really get a chance to, you know, be all I can be to them. You know, I just, like, you know, with Gary, I've never missed, like, parent-teacher conferences and things like that. Like, you know, a lot of people connect us because I played basketball. He's playing basketball and up and coming. But outside of basketball, I was you know, always at all my son's parent-teacher conference, field trips, you know, school plays and things of that nature. So it is deeper than basketball. Like, I'm really parenting, really being a father on top of my kids and involved in what they're doing. And my wife, you know, she might work late hours or whatever to make sure that I'm able to do that. So, you know, I want to give her a big thank you, you know what I'm saying, to Natalia Trent for just being everything for us and whatnot. And, you know, being a real foundation to us. You know, I'm a foundation to all my sons and whatnot, but she's been a big part of that. And she's been behind the scenes a lot because, you know, who wants to talk about mom who didn't play sports? You know what I'm saying? Now, if she had a Division I scholarship or something, it'd be different. But it's great, man. I could be a father to my sons. My life is not stressed out. You know, I love being able to come home from school and meet him and take him straight to the gym, you know, when he was living at home. And I do the same thing with my other sons now. I don't know what they'll become as far as sports-wise, but if at the end of the day, you know, education and good health are what you need.
Right. And Junior, I'm just curious, you know, now the career is all over, high school career is all over, looking back at it, if you had to pick one or two favorite moments, favorite accomplishments, as you move over to Duke, which one would you say are the best?
Yeah, I would say the greatest accomplishments that I've accomplished I had a lot, you know, but the greatest ones to me would have to be the USA gold medals, because it is great. I get to represent my country through the game of basketball. For example, some people might do it through military and stuff like that, but I can do it through the game of basketball, like I said, and touch a lot of people. We go over to the other countries, and they're in awe of us, just how tall we are. Everybody got different hair, spiky hair, and they haven't really seen it before. So just always so much love when we go to the different countries, and everybody just wants to represent USA basketball. So I would probably say that's the greatest accomplishments I would say in high school so far.
Cool. That's pretty cool. And you know, you're coming in, Wendell Carter's coming in. You guys have there's still a couple of moving pieces here to go. Maybe you can probably get a couple more guys. I'm just curious on your thoughts in terms of what you guys think can accomplish next year.
Yeah, we're trying to do big things. Simply, number one thing is a national championship. That's everybody's goal at any university, really. But we're still trying to put some pieces together. We got a lot of pieces right now, but we're still in the works. We're still, me and Wendell are staying in Trayvon Duval's ear, Muhammad Bamba, Kevin Knox, trying to just promote to them about the brotherhood and what can it do for their life. But at the end of the day, everybody's going to do what's best for them and their families. But if we can help in any way, shape, or form, we're doing a pretty good job, I think.
So you mentioned these names, and you're literally in the hotels with them for, like, what, 3 straight weeks at this point? Yeah. I'm just curious, like, behind the scenes, like, how does it work in terms of, like, you just, like, sit next to them, like, while you're eating lunch? Like, how does that work in terms of, like, trying to sort of get him on campus?
We all joke around. Simply, we'd be in the game room, playing in the game room. We'll simply say, oh, what's up, man? You ready to join the Brotherhood? Just, like, simple stuff like that. But we're not the only ones. You know, there's some guys from Kentucky here. There's a guy from Texas here that's trying to get Muhammad Bamba. So everybody's trying to throw their little pitch, and everybody's just recruiting, really, but they're joking in a sense with it, but they're really trying to recruit.
Right. Totally. Who's your favorite Duke alum?
It'll have to be Jabari Parker and Kyrie Irving. Okay. I always watch their highlights all the time on YouTube, what they did, what Jabari Parker did at Duke, and Kyrie's career at Duke was kind of cut short due to the injuries. But what he's doing now in the NBA really just shows that he's a great player. Yeah. And I love watching his game.
Absolutely. And the last month or so, I can imagine, has been pretty hectic for you, just kind of doing the McDonald's game, more recently doing the Hoop Summit, and then coming up today, actually, the Jordan Brand Classic. How would you describe that last month or so? Has it been a lifetime in the making for you?
Most definitely. It's been hectic, like you said, just with the travel. I've been flying like crazy, but I've been doing this for a long, long time now. But we're just flying all over the country. I'm going from Chicago to Portland to now New York. Actually, racking up a lot of air miles, but all these events are great. Actually, I love them. It really helps you promote yourself. You get to show your talent on a national scale. And I'm just fortunate and I'm blessed that I had the opportunity to come to all these prestigious events, really, honestly.
And Senior, you know, you seeing it from a different perspective. Now that here you are, you know, kid is going to Duke. He was talking about when you and him working out in the track. Seeing it come full circle, like, what are your thoughts now that you've seen it? Like, here's a guy that you were saying yourself, you know, you were barely under-recruited. Here's a, you know, top five, top 10 player in the country. From your perspective, now that it's sort of all over in the sense of the high school part, you know, how do you see it from your eyes?
I mean, I always knew that my son was better than average because, you know, we played AAU with a team out of Indiana called Indy Hoosiers. And from like second to eighth grade, we got 3 national titles. And every year we were in the Final Four. So we either played for the championship or we was always right at that doorstep. So that's where he sharpened the competitiveness. And, you know, in second grade, it's only 38 teams. By the time you get to fifth grade, now you got 150 teams. And by the time you get to seventh, eighth grade, it's 200 teams. So we were always in that Final Four championship, and I've always seen my son be one of the elite guards, one of the bigger, stronger, more skilled guards. So I knew he was always better than average. You know, growing up, you know, I wasn't one of those parents in fifth grade, like, my son is going to the NBA. You know, I didn't I wasn't that far ahead mentally down the road. My goal was to just make sure you're always not only better than average, but the best that you can be. And if that's being far, far better than average or just a little bit better than average, but always being the best you can be, and let's keep training your skill and working on your craft to put you in a position to be that. And as he got to high school and, you know, he started getting invited to those, you know, All-American camps like in ninth grade and super sophomore camps and things like that, that's when, you know, you really started showcasing, okay, who is this kid? And now he made a name for himself. And I'd say his junior year, the Houston EYBL session averaged almost like 40 or something for that whole weekend. And from that moment, the recruiting changed and everything was never the same after that.
Word.
So, Junior, I mean, I was looking through your Twitter page and I see that the banner on top has a lot of Drake albums, like a lot. Like probably Drake albums, every Drake album.
Yeah.
Speak about that in terms of, you know, it sounds like you're a very big Drake fan, but you know, what is it about Drake, and you know, what are your thoughts on in terms of, you know, where he ranks among the best?
Drake, aka the Sixth God, is the coldest of all time. He is the greatest artist, rapper, any whatever you want to, I don't know what you label him as. Mm-hmm. He has so many different styles. He sings and raps. Nobody's doing it like him. He's been running and killing the game for a long, long time now. And he's simply the GOAT. So, you know, see, I just pay my homage and put him to my header. And I love him. But, you know, I listen to variety of music. But Drake, he's usually my go-to. But I usually go from Drake to some Michael Jackson, to Rick James, to Bobby Brown. I switch it up a lot. So, right. But at the end of the day, I'm always going to go back to Drake. You know, he's the GOAT.
Favorite album?
Ain't no such thing. They all great.
This generation of kids are Drake and Kobe. See, my generation going to be Jay-Z and Mike.
Word.
You know what I'm saying?
That's me too.
Because if you – see, I played against Mike. So I watched you before I came to the league, played against you. And once I got to the league and saw what it took to really be what he was, 30-plus a night and championships and things of that nature – just the respect and the wow went through the roof. You know what I'm saying? Because until you get in that heat and see what that man had to go through, you know, just, you know, with the groundbreaking things that he's done as far as brands, you know, shorts and the way he had to be the first guy to transcend, like he opened the door for LeBron to be as big as he is now and things of that nature. So just seeing all of that, like, you know, when you're on the outside, you don't understand the business. But once you get inside and you understand it, you're looking at it like, so to me, you know, I keep telling them Jay and Mike. You know what I'm saying? But he going to go with Drake and Kobe. So I can't knock them because they, you know, that's what this is.
Word.
Gotcha.
Prior to entering the business, did you have a favorite player?
Did I have a favorite player? My favorite was Magic.
Magic, okay.
Yeah, Magic just was too cool. I loved Magic. And Magic was probably my favorite, but then Shaq, watching just Shaq's dominance, I just was like, oh, man, you just love the way he just dog and bully guys.
Gotcha. I got one last question before we wrap up. You know, you were talking about playing the league in that early, I guess, late 90s, early 2000s. You know, that Timberwolves team, you know, had Latrell Sprewell, Sam, KG. It didn't work out in terms of, you know, getting to that goal. But just talk about sort of like, what was it about that team in terms of why couldn't you guys get to that level that was expected?
I think the injury to Sam. Had Sam not been injured, we would have won. We were already leading in the series. And, you know, you don't get to the championship doorstep and get to the pinnacle level and start losing your starters and losing your leadership and losing your veterans. It's going to be hard to win, you know. Take Jordan off the Bulls when – they're in game four and see if they win that game, or take Kobe out of two games in any of those series. You know, all cylinders need to be clicking. And, you know, that's why everybody always talks about how special things were. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're trying to be something special, you can't lose a significant veteran. You know, Sam, 18,000 points in this league, you know, getting to the foul line, you know, controlling the tempo of the game and, you know, just this, his fingerprints on the game. You just can't lose that going up the mountain for a championship. You need all your soldiers ready to go.
Mm. Word. Well, gentlemen, we understand we're the only thing between you and the remainder of your festivities for the rest of the day. So In closing, Gary Jr., where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter with @that_kid_Gary. And simple as that, just That Kid Gary on all my social media outlets.
Word, word. We definitely appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
We thank you. Thank you.